Welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Thank you so much for downloading, and oh my gosh, last week, things ended in such a way that I know many of you are on your seats and screaming at Twitter and screaming on the Facebook and all over the place, and so we want to get back into the action right after we answer listener email.
We're screaming too.
Rodrigo is evil man.
Don't include me in this.
Oh.
Yes, actually, Steven, in my contract for Critical Hit, I managed to talk him into me being able to play a Q&A card.
Anytime.
And
I only get major cliffhanger moments.
Yep. And I do it specifically to torture the players.
Okay. Hey guys, says Dan. Let me just say I'm a huge fan of the podcast. It's incredibly fun, funny, and informative. I love every second of it. I have one issue regarding my D&D group that I hope you guys might have some helpful advice. In my group, there are two of my friends who have both been dungeon masters from other groups and taught by different people. So, combined together, there tends to be a lot of arguing, dispute during gameplay about who did it this way or whose DM did what, which is distracting and takes away from the fun, and I just want to find a way to make it end. Thanks, and keep up the good work. That I added all the emphasis.
Definitely could be an issue.
I want this one.
Sure, let's let Adriana knock it out of the park for us.
Tell them not to do that.
Yes!
You're welcome.
Well, here's the thing. If anyone in this group has an answer of how to keep that from happening, we need to have it happen in this group.
Oh, yeah, with this group that Dan's talking about.
Because we kind of do that as well with the, And I think to a degree that's fine, and that's to be expected. But Adriana is right. I mean, if you've got that level of detracting from what you're trying to do, and they're arguing, you know, out of character, and they're having meta discussions, tell them to knock it the F off.
You know, we have one simple rule at Major Spoilers. My site, my rules. So why can't you as the DM say, my game, my rules. When Rodrigo's DMing, we do what he wants us to do. When Rob is DMing, we do what he wants us to do. Right. When Matthew DMs eventually...
We'll fight him every step of the way. and learning to assert yourself as a dungeon master or a game master is part of learning how to do that. And you have to. You have to lay down the law. I've played with people who are super lax about that stuff. I used to be in ongoing games where we got accomplished probably an eighth of what happens in a critical hit session because it would always devolve into out-of-character chatter, and the dungeon master was completely fine with that. And it was annoying to me because I kind of wanted down to crunching goblins, but...
Well, but that also...
If that's how he's running his game,
sure.
There's very little you can do.
Doesn't that also come down to the nature of how you want to play the game? Because some people play... And I've heard other podcasts and other people playing Dungeons & Dragons where it is a time for us to hang out and bullshit. No, by the way, sorry, explicit tag. Eat some chips and drink some beers and laugh and have fun with our friends without really progressing the story a lot. In what I think you've developed, it is about let's tell a story first and let's keep the side chatter to a minimum.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
Well, there are places where side chatter happens, and Rodrigo allows and occasionally participates in the side chatter. It's not necessarily a matter of you can't do it. It's a matter of there are times and places where we do it. There are times and places where he will shut it right down. And I think that, you know, that has to be, you have to have that balance, especially in a podcast where people are actually listening for enjoyment. But if you are having issues as a dungeon master, with people who are themselves former or current other game dungeon masters, tell them flat out, look, you guys are hosing up my story. Or, you know, this is, how would you handle this if it happened in your game?
Brian? I'm sorry.
I mean, for the most part, you guys got it. You know, talk with your players and tell them to cut it out.
Cut it out.
And let them know that it is disrupting the game and causing a problem and see, you know, if you can do it amiably. I mean, the only other thing I could possibly suggest is a different system if you have one that you would like to do. And that way they can't argue about the rules if they're different rules, but it'd be much better just to talk with them and just, you know, get that peaceful arrangement.
Dear Critical Hit crew, hello, my name is Jacob.
Hi, how are you?
And I've been listening to the show for so long that I can remember when episode 2 was just Steven, Matthew, and Rodrigo talking about the Player's Handbook 2 more than 3 years ago. And for some people I know, they burned through the episodes to where I remember your episode 2 like it was yesterday.
Because I just started listening yesterday.
That said, I've been holding on to this question for all three of those years now, and I really have to ask, Mr. Lopez, whatever happened to your exalted campaign involving the Butterfly River? Were you able to finish it? And what ultimately happened? If not, where were you planning to go with it? Any answers you could give would be fantastic, because I'm sure there's at least a small portion of the audience who forgot about this, but now that I brought it up, are now wondering as well, and then I'll add, and are frantically going back to those early episodes and downloading and listening once again. Anyway, thank you for you guys for being so darn awesome. Jacob from Michigan.
That campaign ended kind of in the middle of things. The players or the characters got to a relatively safe place, and then the campaign ended largely because I was a little burnt out. We were actually playing very frequently, and the players were really into it. You know, they were doing a great job, but there were like other things that were going on as well in my life where I kind of couldn't keep it up at the pace that I wanted. And also, I just kind of realized that that campaign just kind of wasn't what I wanted to run. So I was like, guys, you guys get here. I'm sure your characters will continue to have awesome adventures. So we'll just end it when we get to, I want to say Nexus. I think they made it to Nexus, and then it kind of ended there.
They didn't get all the way to Badger?
They did not.
Not about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. No.
Oh, okay.
That's an 80s black and white comic joke right there.
I was laughing at Stevens.
Yes.
All right. I know you were.
Critical Hit team. A little backstory on me and D&D. I tried to get into D&D for many years because my dad played it back in first edition, and I had found his stash of books, minis, papers when I was young, and it looked awesome. He would never play with me, though. I stopped asking for a while, then bought 3.5 edition starter set a while back, brought it to him, and said, let's play. He said, no. Yet again, here recently I saw info about the playtest. I signed up and downloaded the packet and asked yet again, let's play, and he finally said yes. Nice. So for the past 2 months, this is way back in September, I've been, coming up in September, depending on when you're listening. I have a group of six playing, and it is a lot of fun. I recently found y'all's podcast. Let's see where Jeffrey's from. I found your podcast and absolutely love it. I started on episode 160, had to wait for 162, so I went back and started at season 4. Now I'm almost caught up with y'all. I enjoy listening to y'all, and it makes me envy the way y'all play, how everyone is into their characters. But from the last mail call I listened to, I will take the advice of starting a random conversation with an interesting bartender with an eye patch or something to that effect. Now for my question. Will y'all do a show with D&D next? I watched the PAX Prime 12 D&D game with Acquisitions Incorporated, and I learned a lot from that short bit on how y'all handle the game and when the rules don't necessarily cover what I'm facing. And if y'all do a show on it, I know I will learn a lot. Hell, I'm learning a lot about 4th edition, and I just scanned over the books for it. Anyways, just wanted to thank you all for doing the show. I like all of you, so I'm not going to be biased. Keep up the good work, and May all your roles be critical hits, says Jeffrey. We have mentioned this before, and I know some people get angry when this turns into a commercial, but bear with us. We want to continue to do Critical Hit and actually do a lot more stuff for all of our fans, whether they be listeners to Critical Hit or Major Spoilers or Top 5 or
Munchkin Land
or Dueling Reviews or even just fans of the MajorSpoilers.com website. We have the opportunity right now to create more content for everyone. And one of the things that we're doing, you can find out more information over at the Major Spoilers website. Look for it. If you don't see it, it will be up very soon. But what we're trying to do is get a number of $10 a month subscribers, and when we reach our target date, we actually will start some members-only podcasts, right? Now, what those podcasts are, we don't know yet. We know one of them is going to be a gaming podcast. If you follow me on Twitter, at Major Spoilers, you see me throwing out a lot of questions, and a lot of responses are coming back. But will we play D&D next?
We're not saying we're not. But currently there are no plans. Like,
right.
Critical Hit is a 4th edition game. I do not foresee us changing editions in either direction. So all you guys that keep wanting us to go back to 3.5, that's also not going to happen.
But we've been kicking around a lot of ideas, and I came up with one today that I think might be super awesome for us all to participate in. Mm-hmm. It's not a gaming podcast per se. But it will be an exclusive for those people that sign up for the $10 a month recurring donation. And before you freak out, don't worry. All the stuff that you have access to right now is still going to be completely free.
Yep. Critical Hit. Lots of major spoilers.
Lots of land, even more major spoilers. That's the good
all
thing.
All that stuff's going to be free.
And so we're just doing that Pledge Drive, Membership Drive. Thank you for everyone who's already signed up. A number of people have canceled their $5 a month and turned it into $10 a month recurring because they want to be part of that.
Yeah.
And nice. I want to thank each and every one of you personally, but the list is so long, we'd be here until 5 a.m.
Right. We just read it. Create any more
you should listen to the shout out.
Yeah. We're just going to have a thank you podcast.
Hi.
And I would venture to say, by the way, interrupting because I'm rude, if we were to ever change edition, it would probably have to be with new characters because I don't necessarily want to change editions with an existing character and have to not remember what I already did remember before I didn't know the rules in the first place.
Because who knows if Cometfall Charge not, is even in 4th
It certainly is not.
So, see, there you go.
Yeah. Again, we're probably not going to switch Critical Hit, like the campaign that expanded from 4 Against the Void. That's not going to change into another edition. Will you never see D&D Next on this podcast? We're not saying that. You know, we do take breaks from things.
Off-season stuff,
absolutely. So we're not saying absolutely not. We're just saying not right now.
Yes. So as you're talking about other things that people have been asking for, and you mentioned 4 Against the Void, people have been begging me for the Season 1 limited edition t-shirts. Well, they're a limited edition t-shirt for a reason.
Yeah.
They were limited, and it was the first edition. Well, if you guys go over to /loot.com, we have a number of different shirts. A lot of shirts are designed by our good friend Thomas Perkins. You got a Trail shirt, a Ket shirt, a Randa shirt, a Randus, the top seller, an Orym shirt, and a Torque shirt that is all out there. But guess what? I'm thinking about doing this. I'm thinking about taking that Season 1 limited edition t-shirt and creating a variant of that.
Mm-hmm.
It won't be red, but it might be something else. And so look for that over at /loot.com. I found another design that Rodrigo and I had talked about a long time ago, and somebody on Twitter said, hey, how come you guys don't do this shirt? And I'm like, I just found that artwork yesterday.
Right.
You never know. So you never know what we're going to do next. Heck, we don't even know what we're going to do next. But as far as D&D next, wait and see.
Yeah.
Hi, says Ted. I love the Critical Hit podcast.
You do?
Yes, you do, Ted.
What are some suggestions for adding a new player, new character to a company in an ongoing campaign? What are some ways to facilitate this quickly and convincingly? As the DM, as the new player, are the exciting, as the existing company of adventurers? Thanks, says Ted. Adriana has been with us now for a year, right?
About
a year. Hey, happy anniversary, Adriana. How did we introduce a new character to the company in an ongoing campaign?
I think
Are
we made
you
her
asking
listen
me
for
or?
4 hours.
Yes.
Okay. In my case, I would say that Rodrigo introduced my character. Well, he carefully invited me during a good Stot Lake new point. Mm-hmm. So a new setting has is much easier to introduce a character. But you're obviously going to be dropping someone in, like, probably wherever you are. Like, you don't have the benefit of that kind of structure. And you're going to just have a player that's like, can I come in? Well, not until this season's over. So that's,
Although as a dungeon master, that is your prerogative.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
right.
To allow somebody in or not allow somebody in.
Sure. Or say wait.
Or when.
Give me 3, 5, 6 sessions or whatever.
Sure.
But there are a couple of different ways. In Trell's case, I mean, this isn't how she was introduced, but you could tie that character to another character. And that makes for some interesting, like, obviously Trell's tied to Orym via his sister. I've done things like that. Like, you get something. It is, like, more compelling to, like, see what the characters have done already. Maybe they've interacted with this wizard, and this person's like, oh, this wizard sent Bob here to come help you because thinks Bob would be helpful. That kind of thing. Just look for something in the story that you've already made and try and pick someone, like, try and find a good niche for that character to come out of.
Excellent. Hi, Critical Hit crew. I'm Zachariah.
Hey, Zachariah.
Critical Hit is my favorite podcast, and I hope to keep hearing it for years to come. I have questions about helping friends create characters. My long-term game group is about to start a new campaign, and we're putting ideas for what kind of character everyone wants to play. One of our players can't think of anything and answers I don't know to any questions about how she wants to play or what details she likes. She isn't a big fan of fantasy or fiction stories, so we can't get her to choose a character to mimic. She has done two long campaigns with two different characters before. Have any of you had experience with players going into character creation with no ideas? Do you have suggestions on how anyone who has trouble thinking of a character can get started? Thanks for your answers and sharing your stories. That's from Zachariah. I'll just kind of throw this out. When we were doing our Cadillacs and Dinosaurs,
Paladins and Dinosaurs.
Rob was like, so what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't care. Just roll me something and I'll roll with it. I mean, I'm sure that's something that you as a DM don't want to hear, right?
Actually, that's something that as a DM I love to hear.
Yeah, right? Exactly. That's fun, but it sounds like the DM's not creating the characters. Like, when I was doing it, when I was asking you, I was going to create the characters for everybody, but
I wanted
some input just so you.
Yeah, I think
didn't
I
make
may
something
have
that
said
was
something.
You basically ended up saying the satyr.
Yeah, yeah.
Looked really cool. And
yeah,
it's what we ran with, but.
All the backstory and all that other stuff, just totally, sure. whatever, just roll it and let me know.
I definitely have had players like that, where you ask them, okay, well, you're the newest kid, so you actually get to decide what you want to do, and I'll make everyone else basically wrap around that. So what do you want to play? I don't know. Like, well, do you want to be like a heroic type, like a sneaky type? Like, do you want like a big sword? Like, give me anything.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. You know, and it's, I think a lot of the time, it's not actually that they don't know what they want to play. It's not that they haven't even, that they haven't thought about what they want to play. Is that they might not want to put themselves out there. They might not want to say, oh, I think this is cool. And then for you to like make a face and then be like, oh, that's actually not cool. Us D&D guys don't like that stuff.
Drow Ranger, really?
Yeah, and you do run into stuff like that.
We'll do that if someone pitches that.
We talked
that's
about
you're a jerk.
We talked about my Exalted game earlier. Our Nightcast was like straight, complete textbook Nightcast. He had the Nightcast martial arts, sneak. Yeah, he had Ebon Shadow technique, totally sneaky. Like you just. Whatever, like, even if you guys don't actually know what a Nightcast is, whatever that was from the book, like, literally the illustration from the book, that's what that guy was playing.
He was playing Drizzt, basically.
Yeah, he was, actually. So, like, when he pitched me that, I was like, dude, seriously? But I was like, you know what? If that's what you want to play. Go for it. I think that what you're... Like, sometimes you have to do kind of, like, word association to get people places.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I'm going to say just a bunch of words, and if you find anything that intriguing. You find interesting, just raise a hand. Cutlass.
Oh, oh, oh.
Shoes.
Oh, 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 oh.
Sombrero.
Ah, ah, ah.
Mustache.
Meh.
Meatloaf.
See, there you go. Exactly.
Now I'm hungry.
Like, that can get you... That even something as stupid as that can get you someplace. And then you can go from there. You can ask them what sort of story, if they're not into fiction, like, are they into history? Right. Like, are they into math? Figure out a way for them to bring
math
into it.
Get Albert Einstein as one of your characters.
Have him be a mathemagician.
Mathemagician.
Absolutely. Exactly. Absolutely.
And as, you know, as a player and someone who probably for the last 15 years has only really been a player, with the exception of a Shadowrun campaign that I'm just not proud of. I would say that not only have there been times when somebody says, what are you going to play? And I'm like, I don't know. There have been times during Critical Hit when I've been playing a character and I've been saying to myself, what is this guy about? I don't know. But there came that moment where the hook for Brenzen just hit me out of the blue, and all of a sudden I'm like, bam, everything of Brenzen up to this point has built to this moment where I know what he is. I have fully realized Sir Brenzen, and now he's dead.
Well, it's a good thing that it happened before he died.
Sometimes that happens. You don't have your self-actualization, self-realization until the last moment.
You have to give yourself and give that player a chance to feed in whatever he or she wants. And if it's something where she'd be interested in playing a live action John Brown, 11 feet tall with a giant rifle and a Bible in the other hand, there are ways to make that work in a book. That's a reference to the campus capital building, by the way, without that being a thing.
I think that you might try to, I don't want to say trick. take them to coffee or something, or just talk to them casually. Ask them about something else, like some movie that they saw. Try and figure out what movies they like.
Mm-hmm.
Try and figure out what they liked about those movies, and that might help. I think when someone is like concentrating too hard. And like Rodrigo said, like, might be like, no, don't make fun of me for this thing.
Right. Or it puts them on the spot and they blank out too.
Mm-hmm. Right. So try and get them more relaxed and not thinking that you're asking about X.
It did say that she had played two other long ongoing campaigns, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Find out what her characters were in those campaigns. If they were basically the same type of character, see if she would like to do that character again, or if she'd like to branch off and go the exact opposite.
The other thing that you can do is give her a trial character, like literally make what is essentially an NPC for her. Let her play it. If she doesn't like it, then try something else, but at least she'll figure out, oh no, I absolutely hate playing a sniper.
Yeah.
Or if she's into it, then just be like, all right, just run with it.
Mm-hmm. Matthew, I forwarded you an email real quick. We'll get to that in just a second. Hey, says Brandon, I hope you guys are well. My name is Brandon, and I've been playing D&D for years, and I have moved to Beijing. Hi, Brandon.
Hey.
Having never really owned any D&D stuff myself, would it be possible for Matthew Shop in Topeka to be able to send me some items that I can't seem to find here? Being that I'm also from Kansas, I figure throwing my money that way would be awesome. Also, could you give me any really solid leads on digital tabletop gaming applications? I found things, but nothing other than Tabletop Forge seems to be so simple to use. I'd like something that you just start up and have your grid tokens, etc. I just don't like the idea of running it with Google Chrome. All right, so first of all, Matthew, do you guys ship worldwide?
We do not ship to Italy.
But will you ship to China? Will you ship to Beijing?
I believe so.
Why won't you ship to Italy?
Yeah.
We had some issues with Italy.
Hmm.
Italy became a thing.
Okay.
Basically, what happens is the packages get to Italy, and the people say, oh, I didn't order this. And they say, oh, okay, well, keep it. And they say, hey, they didn't order this, so they don't have to pay you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
also, gatekeeper is a horrible insult in Italian.
Is it?
That's true.
Yeah. Gatekeeper.
Is it true? Yeah. Are you?
No.
So, in case you're wondering, Gatekeeper Comics and Hobbies, Huntoon and Gage, Topeka, you can go find the zip code, whatever that is. 600,000.1.
6611, I think.
Yeah, 666, right there in the number. So, D&D Brian?
Yes.
What about this digital tabletop gaming applications?
I've never looked at any of them.
I've been hearing a lot about Roll20.
Yeah, got kickstarted a while ago.
Yeah, but Roll20 is a Google Hangouts application, I believe.
Yeah, it's like an add-on, I guess.
So you would have to, it would get optimal stuff if you did it through Chrome, Google Hangouts. But we play on an actual physical mat, and our mat, who Skypes in, we just have a camera for him to look at it.
It's not the best ideal situation.
It's really not.
If you guys have seen, what is it, Dork Tower? Mm-hmm. Is that the
no. full frontal nerdity?
They do the exact same thing that we do. So I know we probably are not with it in quotes.
No, we're not
up to speed on what's going on. But here's where you, the listener, can come in. Use the comment section over at majorspoilers.com and share your thoughts on what people are using. I know that there's a lot of stuff that people are checking out and recommending to us to use, but quite frankly, at this point in time, we don't have the time to explore all those options. Matthew, you ready to go with this next question?
Okay, so
I finally almost catch up with current episodes of your excellent, excellent game, and Matthew drops a bomb in critical hit number 163. And what is the... Do me some Yiddish there, Matthew.
Well, my Yiddish pronunciation is terrible, and now I'm really self-aware of it, because now there's someone listening who knows. The Lamed Vav Zarikim.
And I mean, I enjoy the random Yiddishism is next as the next big Jewish dork, but the what is it again? Vavnikim?
Stop it. Zarikim.
Okay. Or a big step up.
The Vavniks. Go with the Vavniks.
Okay. Yeah. So here's my question. Is there an RPG with a significant Jewish element? The only thing I've ever seen is the card game Anachronism, which has a couple of cards for the Yidden, but I'm the dean of Jewish life at the world's only pluralistic Jewish boarding high school, and I'd love to introduce something more D&D-ish. I'm toying with the idea, toying is funny, of writing an all Jewish set of D&D character classes, spells, rituals, etc., but I've got way more ideas than time, and if there's something out there already, I'd love to see it. I enjoy the heck out of the podcast, by the way. It's the only way I get to keep a food, well, an ear in the D&D, keep a food, maybe a foot is what he wants to say. Well, an ear in the D&D world since I left my gaming friends and moved 1,000 miles away.
Right.
That's from David.
I don't know. I mean,
unfortunately, the only games that I can think of that do have Jewish influences are highly sacrilegious.
Oh, yeah.
Because they will take, you know, they will look at Abrahamic religions and be like, okay, here's what really happened. And like, demons are actually like the protagonists and, you know, all this like crazy stuff. It's all World of Darkness stuff.
There's also the fact that a lot of times when you see, especially, you know, pop culture, gaming, television, cartoons, it's all very specifically the Ashkenazi kind of Jerry Seinfeld Jewish experience, which can be difficult. I'm not aware of any games that do it
there,
and, like Rodrigo said, in a positive light.
There is one that I can think of, and that is Old Mage. It's called Mage the Ascension. And there is one, like, each group that you can play is based on like a major mystical tradition of like the real world.
And there's a Kabbalah.
And there's one that is basically religious mages. They believe in the one and the prime, and that gets, supposedly they have like this super basic religion that has actually become disseminated as the actual religions of the world, but they kind of have like this true view of it, and they have subsections, you know, one of which is a kind of Kabbalah centric one of which is just a straight up, like, basically like the Maccabees are, you know, have somehow continued to exist through this organization and things like that. So it's the White Wolf guys do a fair amount of research. Their stuff is probably not going to be the most offensive you can find, but you have to be prepared to do some revisions if you're actually involved with the faith to say, oh, no, we can't actually use this aspect of the game because it basically undermines what we believe in.
Right.
So you have to be careful about that.
We have had previous discussions about religion in D&D and the problematic aspects thereof.
Yep.
Of, you know, can you make a wizard in a Christian type tradition? Can you have someone calling on the power of saints or, you know, Jesus or whatever you want to do? And the answer is yes, but boy, is it troublesome.
Right.
And boy, can it be, you know, difficult. I would say that more than likely it would be something that you'd have to put together yourself. But the thing about that I think would make really, really awesome is A, I would play the hell out of that game. And B, it would be something that would be specific to the experience you're trying to create. It would be specific to the experience that you want to have. So you wouldn't have problematic aspects because you'd have written them out of the game. And I always recommend, you know, making up your own stuff and trying to put your own stuff mm-hmm. together, especially if it's out of bits and pieces of everything else that's in the game. But yeah, I don't know of anything that really handles it in a way that I would consider really awesome. And a lot of it is almost flat out disrespectful to some degree, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can understand the desire that David wants to have something fun for their
to play,
but
right. yeah.
again, religion there always throws in so many problems with everything.
Right, yeah. right. And yeah. and there are a lot of games that incorporate it, but a lot of these games are done by totally super cool and alternative people, which means there's a lot of religious subversion.
Yeah.
Because they're like subverting the establishment with my awesome role playing game, right? And religion is one of the establishments. So you're going to get that.
So it's always fun to go back into these archives.
We're not familiar with any Dogs of the Vineyard for
not for Jewish people. If you want to play something that's pretty close to being an awesome Mormon in the Wild West, then play Dogs in the Vineyard.
Definitely. I do know that in Enema Beyond Fantasy, the Kabbalic Tree of Life is part of the character sheet.
No,
that's about that's all Enema, I know. That's that,
A. They, yeah, A N I M A.
Yeah, not Brian has not a little tiny Enema. Bit of an accent.
No, right. Enema.
Yes. Anima.
Okay,
Anima.
So it's always fun to go back into Anima. All the emails that people send us. Because I found one from September of 2012 that basically is like, hey, I noticed in some of those pictures that Trell never had a custom-made figure, so I want to send you guys a custom-made figure of Trell. And, you know, we've been using this custom figure of Trell that was sent to us for quite some time, and it looks super awesome.
Yeah.
So thank you, listeners, for that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And a lot of people are wonderful. Like, hey, check out my picture that I did of Torque, or hey, check out this picture that I did of Worm, or... Yeah, I was bored, so I did this picture of Ket. And people are like, hey, send them. And so they send them to podcast@majorspoilers.com. And that's super cool, and we really appreciate seeing all this artwork that people put in. But here's where you can share your critical hit art. Head over to majorspoilers.com. Go into our forums. You can find it over under community and under forums. And there is fan arting the critical hit.
Well... But I would actually recommend doing your own
thread, sure.
Because that's largely Stiplemaster's.
I'm pretty sure he's the only one
Alex
to put artwork in that one.
Other people have, but...
And even recently, some people have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, go over to the Major Spoilers forum and share all your artwork. But, there's some
but
awesome
there's,
stuff out there.
I would actually recommend doing your own thread, because then people can talk and comment on your own
just
art
your own
specifically.
Stuff, yeah. So we thank everybody who sends us that stuff in.
And remember, Torque has an underbite, but he's not like kind of
right,
thing.
He's not like he's more like you know, like
and remember, Bizarro Torque talks like this, or she. I am Bizarro Torque.
Yeah, has an overbite.
Bizarro Torque has a monocle of intimidation.
Exactly.
Hey, critical
and a
hitters!
Bowler hat plus five.
First time listeners here. I listened to the most recent podcast, really liked it. The game session was really cool. From what I heard, you guys are playing 4th and in the Feywild. The two questions I hope you guys will address. Did I hear something about a robot Stegosaurus?
What?
We did now.
That's awesome.
Yeah, his name was, I believe, Snarl. And then the Triceratops was Slag.
I know that... I've described a lot of different cogs.
Mm-hmm.
In the Exilarchy, one of them might have been a Stegosaurus-looking cog.
Yeah, yeah.
If that's what you heard.
There's also the possibility of some wires being crossed for paladins and dinosaurs.
Yes. Questions the second. Is there somewhere I can take a gander at the player sheets of the characters? I'm really interested in that.
Yeah, we're really bad
Did
at
we?
That.
We're really bad at that.
We've been talking about showing the character sheets for a long time, and we just kind of never have gotten around to it. It's just really not a priority.
Half the time, Rodrigo won't even give me my character sheets. So I'm just like, you know.
So
this is really awesome. Again, people that are sending in art. Here's somebody that created a cosplay of Randus.
Yes. Yeah. That one is awesome.
Awesome. Even down to the cool robot arm, which is
was it Chris?
That is from John.
Okay. So this is like another one.
Is it?
It's the one that you guys have seen.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
Yep.
Or at least that's what his email address says, is John. Okay. I know I forwarded it. It's cool to see all these things again.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that is awesome.
Go to conventions, people. Dress up as your favorite critical hit person, and let's see if we can get 100 Randuses running on the show floor.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Next WonderCon.
Or,
even better, 100 Randuses at the next DragonCon in Atlanta.
The best part about that...
Can we have a Randus versus Doctor War or something?
Yeah. Like, especially because, potentially due to time displacement, you could have 100 Randuses.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
Can I say something shortly?
Please, go ahead.
I'm going to be at Emerald City Con.
Yay!
Emerald City Comic Con, if you guys want to come and see me.
When is that?
It's March 1st through the 3rd in Seattle, in the Seattle Convention Center. And I believe our table 606.
Yes.
And yes, I will have no shirts or anything for you.
And I will have nothing for
nothing Critical Hit related, but for people who don't know Adriana, she's been on our
heroism and stuff.
She's been on our Major Spoilers podcast a lot. She and her friend Kristen do their own comic book, Minor Acts of Heroism. And is there another one? What's the Stop? Stop is the other one. So you guys will have that out there for people to check out.
I think I do have some trail prints.
Will you be doing sketches if someone comes up and says, "Can you do me a quick sketch of Orym hanging out with Torque?"
For money, unless it's, things are going really slow. And if they just want to doodle, then I'll just do it.
She'll just rip one out that she already has in her book.
The 100 million that she has.
$100. There you go. And then, like, Arandus will run by and, like, steal it. I need this! I'll bring it back to you 100 years from now!
I'll put a penny in a savings account 100 years ago! Yeah.
And then a guy with a suit shows up with, like, a folder. He's like, "Sir, here you go." It's like, wow, there's, like, $1 million in savings bonds in here. Well, I don't know whatever money is made of. I don't know anything about banking.
Credits?
Yes.
Brandis, you need to hook me up.
Yep.
Jake writes in, "I have a question for Rodrigo about GMing. I was about to run a game for my friends, and while I was thinking of ways to start the adventure and got a brilliant idea of almost immediately starting the campaign with an intentional TPK by using ridiculously high-level monsters. The way I was thinking of doing this was by saying the party starts in a village and is raided by a large band of monsters that are all the way too strong for the party to take on, and then once everyone goes down... I'll essentially say that the party is knocked unconscious and is awoken to a completely demolished village and basically saying the monsters must have passed them over and then starting the adventure there. I would absolutely love to hear from the Game Master God, Rodrigo, about his idea to find out if this is a good idea. And thank you for making an amazing podcast. The main thing that sets you apart from the other D&D podcasts is you awesome community questions. Oh, you answer community questions.
Right, and we awesome.
Which is awesome.
And it's awesome. Yes. Thanks,
awesome.
And Randus is the best.
Yes.
A lot of Randus fans.
Oh, yeah. The Randus contingent is strong. And apparently has money because they're buying t-shirts.
Yeah, they are.
Awesome.
Yep.
So next time we go to Nerdtacular, we know who's eating for free.
Yes. Awesome.
He just gets lifted up on one of those.
Yeah.
On a throne.
Yes. Yeah.
One. Us. So, first we'll start with Rodrigo and we'll go around the room.
Right.
What,
so,
what the
throwing the
this.
Party against monsters that are clearly too gigantic for them to overcome. I have maybe done that in the past.
You did some things
maybe,
well, though.
Maybe really? Fairly recently.
What?
It is a dangerous proposition.
Yeah.
You could have some. Hurt boxes being entered, some saltiness appear on people. So you have to do that carefully. Starting up your campaign like that, if your players, kind of trust you and if you think they would be down with it, is the way to go. Honestly, I would take that one step further and just start the campaign with them having been captured.
Yeah.
Basically a rival tribe or whatever they're doing. Totally got the drop on them, conked them out, and now they are, in some enemy camp and have the first part of the adventure be breaking out.
Could you, go over to Brian, could you just start with your party wakes up in the middle of a desolated town and not
absolutely.
Even have to go through the TPK
absolutely.
Part
yeah.
of it?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you could definitely do that. I mean, the main thing I don't know. Oops. Yeah,
it's like a square that is like an inch across. How did you accidentally put your foot on it?
I don't know.
He's Brian.
Yes, basically that. But yeah, we actually started a campaign like this where a friend of ours started a game where we ended up fighting a level 20 red dragon with our level 1 characters, and it was all a dream. The main issue is that real quickly once we realize that we're not scratching them at all, not being able to hit, then it just real quickly just goes.
You do run into that problem, which is that even a really big monster, it takes them a long time to actually conk out 4 to 6 players.
Yeah.
So you could run into problems, even if it's a bunch of monsters and you know, they're dealing a lot of damage.
That's what I would kind of suggest. Instead of having just too high of a level, just have too many, just over swarm them if you want to do the big battle, but it may be better.
That could significantly slow it down, though.
Yeah.
Each thing that takes a turn. I really do think that. Well, but then they beat them.
Yeah, until there's way too many.
Yeah, until they overcome them.
Matthew, you have some thoughts to share?
Yeah, don't do it.
Yeah.
How come?
That's probably the best answer.
Because there's so many different ways that this can just end in nothing but rage and butthurt. And honestly, and we talk about this and we joke about this, but a TPK is in some ways a failure on the part of the game master. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't happen and you don't enjoy them, and that sometimes they aren't even good for the game, because they are and they can be, and God, they're fun. But if you try and force a TPK, it's kind of like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day, the second time he goes out with Rita and he's so desperately trying to recreate the wonderful experience of the night before where she kissed him. Don't necessarily go in with the expectation that you want to have something end a certain way. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, don't put your players up against things that they have no business fighting, or in some cases, no chance fighting, because that's where, you know, the really great, awesome parts of the game come from. And don't be afraid to kill somebody if it really seems like fun.
Sure.
But you don't want to go in and say, oh, I'm going to kill somebody.
Well, one more thing. The first few fights really can set the tone of the game. And if your players get creamed on the first fight, then you can run into a thing where you end up with a party that's overly cautious. You know, especially in D&D, you want the guys to run in guns a-blazing, because that's kind of how the game is played.
Right.
But if on the very first fight you just whoop them, your players will be like, oh, when we go up against overwhelming odds, we lose.
Yeah,
Let's just all train into stealth.
Right, right.
You know, and then you end up with a party that's not doing what you want.
I forget which one it is, and one of our listeners will remind me, but it's one of the pre-built campaigns where you go up against Orcus and you actually, your party is set up to die or set up to fail, and then you wake up in the caged, you know, realm of Orcus. So, you know, it's not something that's not an unknown instance, but
I would say, I would say if you're going to go that route, just start out with you've been whooped.
Yeah. Or, I mean, if you want to have the big action scene of the town being sacked, more presented up of a way of, you know, trying to defend what villagers you can and do what good while this overwhelming force is coming at you.
Greetings, Steven and Critical Hit Minions. First, I would like to know how long the group tends to play for on an average game night. And second, what would it take for you to upload an unedited episode? I mentioned before that some of what gets taken out is just you guys talking about D&D in general or goofing off. And I know that I'm not the only one who would love to hear what you guys discuss. Keep up the great work, Nick. Okay, first of all, what would it take? How long do you guys tend to play on an average game night? So typically we start around 7:30 and we'll play till midnight, 2 a.m.-ish, something like
Up till 3.
Give or take.
Yeah, sometimes last time, a couple of weeks ago, when we were doing the last episode that you guys heard, it was 3:30 by the time I finally kicked everybody out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Matthew and I get up in the morning and go to work, and Rodrigo, too.
Right. So, really between 5 and 8 hours is
and
what we end up doing.
In the early, early days when we played this, we played during the day, and so we would start around noon, and we'd have to be done at 5 because I had to go get my kids at daycare.
Right.
So, it's kind of like that. What would it take for you guys to upload an unedited episode? Well, I never ever really want to upload an unedited episode because there's a lot of stuff that just isn't appropriate for the show. It has no context for the show. And in some cases, if Rodrigo is setting up a board, in one instance, there is literally 25 minutes of just nothing going on. I mean, everybody's up from the table,
getting
drinks, and just silence for 25 minutes.
And I think that's you know, a lot of our listeners aren't familiar with that process, the process of putting a show together. Most of the stuff that gets cut out is boring stuff. I know you guys might think about it and think that we are hilarious 100% of the time.
Oh,
and
the reason why we are hilarious 100% of the time is because of editing.
Absolutely. And, absolutely, yeah. 100%.
If there is something awesome that happens to get recorded, usually it'll be tacked onto the front or the end of an episode.
And the only one of us who is 100% funny is Brian because of the way he chooses his tactical nuclear strikes. And
basically.
Which in a way... Sniper. In a way, is a form of personal editing. I mean, he just, you know, gets it in when he can. But, you know, I mean, Steven cuts out.
It depends. You know, there are some times in an average hour-long episode where I might cut, you know, that you guys listen, that's an hour when it gets uploaded. I've cut out about 15 or 20 minutes of stuff, especially when it gets into combat. I try to trim it down. This episode will have almost zero editing.
Mm-hmm.
But those people that have been listening to the show for a long, long time may have noticed in the last couple of, probably the last month or so, maybe since the beginning of January, I've intentionally been letting a lot of those things slide. So that 5 seconds of silence or that 10 seconds of silence while someone is trying to think, I debate, do I leave that in and just let it go? Or do I trim that down? And so there is some of that there, but I've been editing less and less of the show, but you're never going to get an unedited show just because a lot of the stuff is just, it's just this.
A big part of the reason.
Nothing.
A big part, I think a big part of Critical Hit's success over other Real Play podcasts is that we all have our own mics.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of editing as opposed to, you know, just hearing a lot of paper shuffling and stuff being moved around and people getting up to use the bathroom and the thing just rolling and rolling and rolling. Because seriously, I've listened to some podcasts where that seems to be the bulk of what's happening. Yeah. And it's not every episode. Yeah. But with Critical Hit, you know that every episode that you listen to is going to be mostly some kind of Dungeons and Dragons related thing.
Yeah.
Either a discussion or the actual game. And the other thing is that sometimes we take pauses because we have to. And it's like in the middle of something that's actually interesting. And we edit that out so that you can get more story. Of course, then we throw question and answer things.
Just
to torture.
And sometimes it's and sometimes it is literally a, you know, if we have to do a rules lawyering or if we have to look something up, I'll edit out that entire part of us just looking it up. And so, yeah, you may hear Matthew and Adriana, or you may be missing out on Matthew and Adriana talking about their day at work, but. Really, to be honest, not that Adriana and Matthew are boring, but it doesn't contribute to the overall
experience. We are hilariously vulgar, and you don't want to hear
it. And that's the other thing. Some of the stuff that does, also some of the stuff that gets edited out is like personal stuff, because believe it or not, we are actually friends, and sometimes we like talk about our day at work and whatever, and we have other jobs, and we don't want that to get involved either.
Yes, right. Exactly. Especially if we're talking about Rodrigo's boss. Oh, wait.
That's very true.
Thank you for that comment, Matthew. Hello.
We also cut out Matthew going through extended versions of copyrighted songs.
Yes.
Because we don't want to get sued. So, for example, you will not hear
his
Matthew,
full rendition.
Yes, you will not hear Matthew go through the entirety of Angel in My Centerfold, even though we did.
Dang it.
Nah.
Oh, crap.
Hello. Thank you so much for this podcast. I've listened to every episode, working my way through them starting back in February. I found this podcast. So, again, not this February that you're probably listening to this in, but a year ago. I found this podcast by searching for D&D podcasts on iTunes, so all your listeners can be assured that all those 5-star ratings really do help expand the audience for the show, and we do thank everyone who does that very, very much.
Thanks.
Let me go ahead and get to my point, says Adam. Hi, Adam. I'm playing a campaign setting where the campaign's events are going to trigger conflict between the races of the world. I have a concern that my party may consist of characters of those races and may end up in a conflict with each other. In a more general sense, how do you deal with situations as a game master where the motivations of loyalties of the player characters come into conflict? That is, the players themselves are getting along fine, but their characters clash. I don't want to end up in a situation where the party can't move forward because their characters disagree over which sides to support in the conflict, or even disagree on whether to get involved at all. Or even worse, the party ends up splitting up and pursuing different paths. So in my scenario, I'm worried about having two player characters with very strong racial identities, say a dwarf and a dragonborn, find out that the dwarf and dragonborn races in the world are in conflict, mm-hmm. and each wants their side to win in the race because of their identity. How do you handle this without breaking the party up or railroading them into agreeing on a path? Thanks again for all your work, and you put into making high-quality podcasts for all of us D&D geeks. Adam from Michigan. Rob.
Sometimes you may...
Patrick Cannon.
What's that?
Sorry.
Point at you again, yes.
Patty, Patty, puke, puke.
So essentially the question boils down to what happens if your party can't agree.
How do you prevent that from happening?
Yeah.
In this scenario, I don't know that you can necessarily prevent it from happening. I mean, you're setting up the races so as they will be at war. Mm-hmm. The only way to prevent this specific one would be to set it up so as it's dwarves and dragonborn versus elves and orcs or something along those lines. Or try and make it so there's a clear right and wrong answer, maybe?
Sure.
The issue with moral grayness in games is that people may side different sides. And
look, Orym and Trell have gotten along fine without murdering each other yet.
but also there's no active hostility
between the two races.
And Eladrin. I would say that the best way of doing that is to have something that's bigger than that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the Dragonborn and the Dwarves are going to go to war with each other, right? And your party has a Dragonborn and a Dwarf. So the way to set that up is to have those two guys be privy to the Tieflings that are instigating this whole thing.
Yeah.
They know that this war is not going to be in the best interest of either of them. You know, secretly, the evil guy is going to destroy both of their races, right? And he's gonna get them to do it
so that he doesn't have to.
So that he doesn't even have to touch it.
It's much easier to roll over the rest of the country.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. So that way they unite in their knowledge, and then that actually is going to probably forge a bond between those two characters. So that when they end up in Dragonborn lands, the Dragonborn is gonna have to stand up for the Dwarf, and vice versa on the other side. Of course, Dragonborn taller. It'd be easier to just stand up for the Dwarf.
Matthew, do you require when you bring people to the table to know ahead of time what their races and class and all that stuff is?
Oh, yeah. I have to know at least something about what they're bringing to the table. Now, it's not something where you want the 50-page explanation of every single aspect of their character or the backstory.
Let me just ask them, wouldn't it be easier to, hey, I'm going to create a conflict between these two races. Oh, here are two races that is not represented in my party. Those two races are fighting against each other.
Yeah, you could do that too.
Yes.
But I'm not
saying yours is a bad idea because I think that's really cool.
Well, and this goes back to something that I talk about a lot that I think a lot of people don't think about. And that's you have to set this stuff up from the moment of character creation. Mm-hmm. If you know that your game is going to be about this giant war, this giant 10-way war between every race in the setting, then you have to either lead the characters or lead the players down that road without them knowing, or straight up say, this is going to be a game about a giant war between 10 different factions. You have to be from one of these factions, and also you have to have a reason to not automatically kill the rest of the party.
There you go.
Like, you can just put it all out on the table and say, now let's make this. It sounds to me like character creation has already happened.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like the game hasn't started. Okay. At the time when this was sent, we're opening the time capsule.
Hello, past people.
Yes. Apparently, Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go is the number one song in America at this point. But yes, go back and before the game starts, future people, and plant those seeds in the characters so that they, when they meet, they don't kill each other.
Here's a perfect question for Adriana to answer, because I think she's the only one that has never answered this question before. Hello, says Eric. I just recently started following your show, and I can't stop. It's one of the most interesting shows on the internet, and it doesn't hurt.
Here we go.
It doesn't hurt that it's well made. Okay.
And it doesn't hurt.
Such sounds high
to me,
praise.
Yeah, it sounds to me like this person is listening to his or her shows like really loud.
I have one question. Ready for this, Adriana? I have one question. At the moment, I'm listening to the 11th episode Into the Black Oak Woods, but I can't see any pictures on your website. I was wondering if the problem is in my computer or on your server. Thank you and keep up the good work, a satisfied listener.
Once, long ago, something terrible happened to the servers, if I understand it correctly.
Yes, 2010, May to be exact.
Yes.
There was a dock time.
May 14th to be exact.
The Fire Nation came and destroyed the servers, and so those pictures are no more. Steven may or may not have them lost somewhere in somewhere.
I have an update.
But yeah.
Did you find them?
So, I don't know which ones I have, but I have so much data, and I never really throw away data unless it just crashes in a true hard drive crash, kind of like what happened to the server. But over the last, I want to say 3 months or so, I bought a giant SAN, a storage area network device, and I've already filled it up. 10 terabytes of data already filled up. In the process, I was taking all of these old hard drives, these 1-2 terabyte hard drives, these flash drives and everything, and I've been putting all that data onto the SAN, just doing a big data dump. And as I'm sorting through the data, I'm like, why does this say CH16-23? And so I have found a lot of those images. I don't know when or if I'll ever get around to putting them back up on the site, but I have found some of them, not all of them, and I don't know specifically about this this one episode, but in the near future, we may be able to get those back up into the site. I just got to find the time. That's the thing right now that's a big killer for me is the time.
Yeah.
Give it to an intern?
We don't have interns. I have young Zach who was supposed to do an internship with me over a year ago and never finished it. So now he's mad scrambling to get his A. So he's editing the Want List videos while we're recording Critical Hit. And one time Rob was an intern.
Mm-hmm.
And you can notice that we still don't have those pictures up on the website.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Rob was the kind was of that? Intern who just kind
no,
of...
That, wasn't
that was actually before the crash, shoot. Wasn't it?
No, that was after
no.
the crash. That was something else that we haven't announced yet. So, but that will be coming as well. This is a good one. Oh, wait a minute. Anyway. Hi, I wanted to thank you all for the hours of entertainment I get from listening to this show. I never got to play D&D growing up. Being a shy, awkward girl that I was, I never got up the nerve to ask my cousins to let me join them, but I've always wondered what they did when they disappeared to play. Now I have found Critical Hit a few months ago, and I've been quickly working my way through the episodes. I'm still pretty far behind, only on episode 76. I mostly listen on my way to and from work, and I can usually get in at least 2 episodes during the bus ride. Holy crap, you got a terrible commute.
That's horrible.
And considering that our episodes are an hour and a half, so it's an hour and a half drive each way.
Oh
now, listen, I lived in Atlanta many a year ago, and it was on average about an hour to an hour and 15 to get from Smyrna to downtown Atlanta every day for me. Yeah. It's terrible.
Smyrna.
And then I lived out in Austell. So.
Moon over Smyrna.
No, that's Parma. I frequently find myself laughing out loud in the middle of the bus or walking down the street. I do get a lot of strange looks, but I don't even mind. So thanks for making me look like a crazy person on the bus, guys.
You're welcome.
That's from Samantha.
We're just trying to get you not just our D&D experience, but our real life experience of people avoiding us on the bus.
I don't get on a bus. I drive a piece of crap car because the bus is filled with people who scare me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Also, I never get enough room on the bus.
Like people that laugh to themselves.
Yes.
A lot of people say that they get that people give them strange looks, whether they're walking down the street or on the bus or in a public toilet. You know, I can understand. I'm glad that we can make your day. What?
Let's not stop to analyze that.
No, move on.
Moving on.
Lady and gentlemen, says Jim, as a late 40-ish executive for a Fortune 500 company, I've appreciated the opportunity to tap into my old days as GM. Though it's been 20-plus years since I have GM, subscribing to the podcast has allowed me to revisit the enjoyment I had hosting my world, which ran for 12 years, and many kudos to all of you for an entertaining listen. My question, selfish of course, is have you ever thought of having guest players join the campaign from time to time to add some color and new flavor to the campaign? Though a bit older than your average player, I would love to help out if ever needed. Adriana, another perfect question for you, because you've never answered it yet.
I really need to make a fact for you guys. Okay.
I think we've asked you to, haven't we?
Not officially, certainly.
No,
I think she's brought it up before.
Yeah.
But. No, is the short answer. because Rodrigo is very particular about and does a very thorough vetting process consisting of only people that he knows.
How long did we know you before you were invited onto the show? 2 years? 3 years?
Maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And Rodrigo had approached me before about it, and I did a rigorous training process that no one asked me for, just because I'm insane. And, well, I was a really big fan of the show, and for obvious reasons. So, yes, Rocky theme song, Eye of the Tiger, and jogging a lot, yep. And...
I remember getting that email and being like, Rodrigo, I'm ready to join the show because I've been in a lot of like meat coolers, like punching things.
I finally caught that chicken.
Run up the stairs and like chasing a chicken and stuff.
So that's all we can
do.
So let me just tell you, Jim, it's nothing against you because we get this question all of the time. Part of it is, we recorded very specific times, and scheduling 5 people to get here at those specific times is really tough. And adding in this other element, whoever or wherever they may be, complicates things. So, yeah, people who are writing in wanting to join the party, thank you so much for doing that. Mm-hmm. Let me give you a suggestion. I don't know if we'll be able to do this year. Nerdtacular 2012 is taking place in Salt Lake City in one of the resorts outside of Salt Lake City. It's a great event. Last year, we went... and played with a bunch of our fans who were there. I think Rob ran the game.
Yep.
Rob ran the game.
Yep.
And we got a lot of a few of our listeners in. This year, Nerdtacular is expanding to 2 days with one of those
officially.
Days. Yeah, officially expanding to 2 days with one of those days focusing on gaming. And I don't know if Scott hasn't announced our role in that yet, but we've been approached to do some things. So if you want to go to Nerdtacular 2012, happens July 5th and 6th. You can go over to Nerdtacular, I think it's nerdtacular.com, mm-hmm. for more information on that.
Yep. The other thing is you can use Critical Hit as a means to find other people who want to play. You can mm-hmm. go to the Major Spoilers forums and ask around if anybody... I know that very recently, somebody was on there talking about a campaign that they're running through Google+.
Yep.
Like a face-to-face campaign that's going to be online. So you can get people to play with you that way. And you probably won't join Critical Hit. It's unlikely. We're kind of
sure.
full up right now.
Yeah.
But... you can find other people to have amazing adventures.
So how's that again? Where's that again? Where can people find that?
People can find this at www.majorspoilers.com, and they can click on the community tab mm-hmm. on the top navigation bar, and that will lead you to the forums. You can click on it, and there's a drop-down menu, and you can click on specific stuff like that, but if you actually just click on the community thing, it'll take you to the forums.
HTTP.
Yes.
So Spencer asks, I have one question. Do you have any tips for organizing and getting some adventurers together? Only one of my friends is interested, and I just want to fight me some dragons. Cat G still viable? I know somebody wrote in a while ago saying, hey, I went up to the Cat G website, and it doesn't look like it's been updated in a while.
That may be.
Yeah.
We are somewhat actively working on that. Our current president, our local president, the former president of National, and a few others of us are actively working on that. Some of it has been updated. You may still be able to find it contact information for... some of the contact information for the local chapters should still be relevant.
Okay.
Other than that, go back to the last question.
Yeah, and Jim actually... this is the same Jim that wrote in a little bit ago, sent another email the next day, loves Critical Hit so much. I sent an email to your probably overflowing email bag, but I was wondering if there was a good resource to find online D&D games. And again, you might go over to our community forums. They have some play-by-post stuff there. You might see if there's other places that do online play-by-post type stuff.
Mm-hmm. There are.
There are a couple like websites you can look at.
There are specific,
Nearby Gamers. Is one. Meetup.com, I think, is pretty usable. Pretty useful.
I actually had somebody contact me the other day. Because meetup.com is not just, hey, I'm looking for a date and I'm lonely. It's very rarely.
It's not just for polite people with deep voice and southern accents.
That's a y'all. The friend of mine the other day was like, oh, yeah, I just moved into this area and I was looking for people to go hiking with. And guess what? There's a whole bunch of people and now I've got all these friends. So, yeah, meetup.com might be a great place. They're not, of course, sponsoring us or paying for anything, but I know that I've had a lot of friends that have had success with that. And
but they should be.
Out. Yes, they should.
You might also try, this is kind of old school, but news groups. There are news groups that do this kind of thing that are like D&D specific ones. And you might, I'm not sure, I'm saying news groups, but is there like a more...
Message boards?
Not message boards, but yeah, but news groups are more
you
like...
You mean a Moo or a Mud? Is that what you're talking about?
The Usenet? Did somebody say the Usenet?
Usenet, yes, that's what I mean.
Go on to IRC channels and find
them. IRC channels, like, they're pretty old school, but they're very dedicated people. And sometimes, I don't know, it's weird, like, the places where you'll find gamers. I know my friends... Amazon jerks. They have like private sort of like news servers where they in like forums and stuff where they can talk to each other and they can their company's so big they can find other gamers pretty readily. So try to maybe look at those resources.
So Scale, I don't know, I'm probably mispronouncing the name. Scale says, "Hi there. I'm unsure as to whether or not this is the correct address to be mailing you in regards to Critical Hit." Well, they sent it to Schleicher at majorspoilers.com, which is fine. But the best place to send your questions, of course, is podcast@majorspoilers.com.
Because people can actually spell podcast.
Yes, because it's a lot easier than Schleicher.
but kudos to you for spelling Schleicher.
Yeah, that's true. I just got this iPhone after being a troglodyte for years and refusing to get a smartphone. Still confusing anyways, I have two questions. One, why is there no WotC Apple apps for character generation, etc.? It seems like they're missing out on a very large market for no reason. Or am I just a troglodyte and I can't find the Wizards of the Coast apps?
Not official Wizards of the Coast,
yeah,
no.
WotC doesn't really handle a lot of Apple stuff. Well, until
D&D
recently,
doesn't handle Apple stuff well.
Until recently,
yeah, Magic
MTGO
the Gathering.
Didn't
oh, that's
have
Magic
an Apple.
Have.
No, you're right.
Magic the Gathering has had their
MTGO. Duels of the Planeswalkers, which is that introductory game. But Magic Online has existed for a long time.
Right.
You can play like literal Magic as opposed to like pre-made decks and stuff.
Yeah.
That was not available for Mac until like last year.
Yeah. Wow.
Way late last year. And I don't know if that client's actually on its full launch or not
yet.
Oh,
really?
Go ahead, Adriana.
I use, there's two apps that I found useful. One is really great. It's called Syllogy, and that's for an Android phone, and I'm sure they must have
iOS version.
An version for it. And Syllogy is great because it lets you log into your Wizards account. And you can log into your Wizards account, and it pulls up, you can look up anything from the glossary. So if you want to know what this spell does, if you want to know what Lizard Sight does, you'll find out that it's not real. It's in fact Wizard Sight. And you can, it's very useful. It's like if you're like, what does this ritual do again? Or if you're like, what does my axe do? What is my axe? It's extremely useful for that. Oh, I'm sorry. No. It's like,
hey!
No, I didn't mean you.
There are, if you're like, if you have questions like, when do my temporary hit points kick in when I get bloodied? Or what does my axe do?
What is half orc resilience?
Yes.
What is a ranged basic attack?
I have literally frantically looked up, how to do what's it called? When you charge someone. What do I do? And get to look very like I totally knew how to do that. And there's one called Cave Sheet. And there are a couple different ones that you can save out your D&D 4E sheet from the character builder and load it onto your phone, and it lets you have your character sheet right there. Cool. And there's a lot of dice rollers. There's like a billion dice rollers.
There's a million dice rollers, yeah. Question the second from Scale. Do any of you have experience with the Warhammer fantasy game Mordheim? It's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Matthew, you do?
Oh, I have. Define experience.
I don't
have aware of it.
Have I played it up and down, backwards and forwards? No, but I haven't really done that with most of the Warhammer games. However, I work in a gaming shop, and one of the things that you run into in a gaming shop, now get this, are games.
What?
So yes, I have a casual familiarity with Mordheim, more than it just being Nathan Explosion's house.
P.S. says Scale, Smith was the best, and you bastards let him die. Mm-hmm. Shame on you.
Let him die?
Yes.
Let him die. Oh, your LA privileges are revoked, my friend.
I say let him is kind of a lower term than what actually happened.
Yeah, Rodrigo
plugged him into the thing what would kill him.
Hey.
Oh, like we set that up.
We looked for so many alternatives.
I know.
We did. We're like, can we use a ducky? Could we with a fox? And Rodrigo's like, no.
Guys, how about this? I got another idea. How about we give up
and let the
and thing go back to the natural world and then just live with the monkey lizards? Nope, let's kill Smith.
Let's kill Smith.
Well, to be fair, Randus did get like a particular vision, but I don't know if he... Never mind.
No, wait, you're the only one who actually knows how this show ends. Tell us.
Well, there was one episode where... Does anyone care? Should I be talking about this? Does anyone care?
I don't care. I don't know what you're talking about first, but go ahead. I can always use that magic.
Feel free to edit this out. Okay. There's one episode where, if I remember correctly, on the moon, you guys only barely sort of won this fight, and you woke up in the that one guy who lived on the moon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Sarlacc pit, yeah. His house.
Tiger dude.
Yeah, Jaguar guy. Yeah. Tiger. So,
Rodrigo. Building up the rage.
So, Randus, I think, woke up first, but he had a vision of Smith kind of pierced, I think, like very cross crucified looking, if I remember correctly, and like blood dripping down on Randus's head. And but then it turned out to be his assistant tapping him to wake him up, and I don't know if that was prophetic so much as like maybe reminiscent more of that terrible fight with the skeletons.
Yeah, I was gonna say, are you sure that's not how he woke up in the tower?
No. It was like it's like a weird dream.
I would take your word for it. She's listened to it more than we have. Well, I'm not speaking for Steven, but.
I only listen to this show twice, maybe three times. Once when we record it, once when I edit it, and then once to spot check it after it's been posted. Now,
and
I know
even
that
then, it's not like listening to this one.
Oh, it is.
If I'm wrong, I would...
No, know. You're what absolutely that? Right.
Oh, okay.
You're correct.
Okay.
Let's see. One more email before we get out of here. Let's see.
Excuse me, that was very rude.
Oh, boy, I'm leaving that in.
Thank you.
Of course.
I said there wasn't going to be any editing of this episode.
My name's Steven, and I don't invent him.
Celebrating 200 episodes of Critical Hit, says Brian from Texas. Dear Critical Hit team, thank you so much for all the hard work and work that you've done for producing over 200 podcasts of Critical Hit. I guess he wanted to get this in before it was... before we actually hit the 200th episode.
Good job.
What episode is
that? We're in the 190s, I think, right now. Oh. Somewhere around there. So he's really close. And he sent this back in November. So
good,
really
good.
Close.
Yeah, good.
Right. Well,
the guys and girl are phenomenal to listen to day after day, and the stories of the Torkeltones are well worth a novelization. All of your antics over the years are memorable and funny, from Matthew's pun about Elvin Dew and Rob's success as a diplomat. to Brian's failurific meddling of space-time and Steven's encounter with his long-lost never-was uncle, to Rodrigo's amazingly cruel TPKs and Miss Adriana's fresh enthusiasm in the group. All of you are wonderful entertainers and actors, and it's a privilege to count your podcast among my favorites. Thank you. I have two things to ask. One's a mechanics issue and the other a hypothetical situation. First, I'm sure it's been brought up over the past, but why hasn't Orm gotten it to upgrade his flame wand plus one? Or at least a new wand with a different power?
He's got a sword now.
Yeah, hang on. You answer that.
Because I haven't asked for one. I haven't looked for one, and I haven't really had a desire to find one. Plus, I probably don't even remember to do it. Plus, I got that really cool sword.
There you go.
Well, maybe I did, because if you all remember the last episode, maybe I no longer have that.
Because Orym has several things that key off of the fact that he doesn't use wands anymore.
Yep.
He can actually just channel all of his wand stuff through swords,
yep.
is what Steven was probably
getting
at.
Yeah, that's
what
I was getting to eventually. After 200 episodes and 2.5 years of D&D, are there any changes you would like to have made about the campaign?
Yes, the players.
Well, you got plenty of volunteers, it sounds like.
Apparently.
Say the doctor shows up in his TARDIS and insists on an experiment to see how Four Against the Void would have been different with significant changes to the party makeup. If the party of five, Miss Adriana included, were to essentially restart the entire campaign, what would you do differently? Uh-huh. Maybe a diva artificer. I was going to read that as Devo, and I was like, Randa's wearing a flower pot on his head?
Yes. Okay.
The Devo artificer would be great. He'd be like, hey, Kat, you must whip it. Yeah.
Let's do it.
a Riker bad. Paladin, an elf-loving wizard. More solo boss fights. I'm curious about your opinions on this, as it's always been something of amusement to mine to imagine if the game had included a dragonborn barbarian from the get-go as part of the group.
Torque should have had a French accent. Because French Torque would be quite entertaining, I think.
But his giant is his native tongue, so he should have had a Spanish accent.
Yes, but then Rodrigo would look at me with canon. He looks at me with that face, and I get that same look when I was, saying Zadi Keem and knowing that someone listening actually knows how the word is supposed to be pronounced. It's just, it's wrong.
I think there are things that I have regrets on, right? I wish we wouldn't have done that. But I don't think that I would go back and change anything about the way the story's played out, because it's been pretty awesome all the way through.
I would have written down Smith's original name somewhere where I would actually remember to look at it.
Brian?
Oh, I don't know. It's so many good times. I don't know what I'd want to change.
Adriana?
Well, there was at least one time where I was like really freaked out about how a session had gone. And I actually ended up talking to, I was like really, really freaked. This is really early on. I'm sure you can guess which session.
Was it the skeletons in the tower?
Yes.
I wouldn't have stabbed the skeleton.
Yeah, I guess there's. I don't know. I got a cool robot arm out of it, though.
Yeah.
See, everything that went horrible is the best stuff.
And
that's.
Torque still
I don't want to change any of
anyway.
Yeah, hang on.
Adriana.
So I got. I was like pretty freaked out and about what I thought, what I felt was like some pretty big mistakes I'd made. And. I was actually talking to Matt. I was actually really upset about it, and I ended up talking to Matthew about it maybe a day or two afterwards. And I don't know if you mind me telling them this. If you remember this, Matthew. Okay.
Oh, I do.
Okay. So Matthew basically said, if I'm remembering this correctly, that, the things I did weren't mistakes exactly, that more like sort of, I guess the gist of it was like more roll with it punches and not get too hung up on it. And, I did try to like go, okay, can I work this out so that it makes sense, in my mind? And I think I came to like a good way of figuring it out. I'm sure there's like things where I'm like, I should have redone this. But then I think a lot of cool things happen because of it. I don't know. It's how I say this. Like, obviously, things that the characters do and decisions that we make affect what happens. I mean, obviously, the very large consequence you kind of saw in last episode. That was a pretty big, you know, thing that happened as a consequence of decisions the characters made. And whether those decisions were mistakes or not is kind of, I mean, we might have gotten to that point in another manner. You know, we don't know the mind of Rodrigo, so it's kind of hard to say. Like,
you don't want to.
And, you know, you can treat it like real life. When I was 24, I was sitting in a Denny's and a woman accidentally proposed to me. And everybody said, oh, you've only known each other for 4 days. This will never work. And 20 years later, and, you know, a pretty awesome kid, some of the people who told us, you've only known each other for 4 days, it'll never work, have already been divorced and remarried. Mm-hmm. And so I say to those people, Rodrigo, you got to roll with what you do.
Rodrigo?
There's a lot of things that I would do differently, just usually mechanically speaking. For example, I would probably try and remember the powers of a lot of monsters, because, like, afterwards I was like, oh, I could have really screwed them over.
If only I
well, even then, like, sometimes you guys will just roll a group of monsters, and I'll be like, why did that happen? And then I'm like, oh, because I wasn't applying the, like, 4 extra dice of damage that they do when they get combat advantage, which they do all the time, because they have a power that automatically gives them combat advantage, you know, that sort of thing. So mechanically speaking, yes. Story-wise, other than really kind of trying to, like, I think personally I did a lot of, like, the story kind of floundered a little bit at the very beginning of Celestial Crusade. So either, you know, if I had to do all over again, I would have either abandoned the pretense of you guys kind of scattering out and doing your own thing and just put the quest in front of you from the very beginning, or I would have tried to push with redoubled efforts for that to happen. Either way would have been fine. But of course, any of those things would have completely and drastically changed everything about the game.
Yes, considering how last episode ended, I'm sure there are a lot of things we would have liked to have changed, but I guess we won't find out for another week what actually happens. I'm going to guess, right, Rodrigo, that the show's going to be here next week?
Yes, the show continues.
Yay!
We should do another mailbag.
However, next week we're all going to be rolling up our luchadors.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Awesome.
For another round of Mucha Lucha.
All right, everybody. That wraps it up for this Q&A of the Major Spoilers. Or, I'm sorry, not Major Spoilers. The Critical Hit Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Thank you for everyone who sent in. Thank you for all the kind words. And, you know, people that send in critical comments, we do read those as well. They don't just go right into the trash. We do read those, and we do, well, they go into the trash afterwards.
Afterwards, yeah. But we read them.
But we do read them. But thank you, everyone, for your support. Over the years that we've been doing the show, we enjoy doing this immensely. Anybody want to quit, even after last week's...
No. Everybody's in it to win it.
Yes.
And I'm having fun. I have already rolled up El Tenedor Rojo.
Oh, no, that's a good one.
Yeah. That's going to be my new character.
This is the Lucha.
And he's going to have a damn French accent.
Yeah, my guy's Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That works.
Bob the Luchador.
It works forwards or backwards.
That will get too confusing.
Wiener dog.
Wiener dog.
Wiener dog and chainmail.
Oh, yes. I don't know what's going to happen next week. And if you guys want to listen and find out what happens next week, please download.
I have an
share
image
the
of
love.
Wiener dog and chainmail.
Send your questions to podcast@majorspoilers.com. And we'll hit those December questions sometime in November, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the support you guys have been giving us. We mentioned Slash Loot earlier. We mentioned the memberships, a $2 or $5 recurring. $5 or $10 recurring a month donation. Every little bit helps and allows us to do a lot more. Cannot wait for the second half of 2013, and I bet you can't either. So until then, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
This podcast
podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.